We're going to begin today in the Middle East. And as you've been hearing in the bulletin, the invasion of Lebanon by Israel continues. There are strikes on southern Lebanon, evacuation orders issued for villages there, and strikes and evacuation orders also being issued in Gaza as well. Dozens of deaths and further casualties in both areas. You may have heard in the news today the condemnation again by Taoiseach Simon Harris of attacks by Israeli forces on UN positions in Lebanon. Just in the last few minutes, the Taoiseach Minister for Defence Micheál Martin tweeting that the indiscriminate bombing and killing in Gaza and the West Bank and Lebanon must stop. He said there needs to be full de-escalation and above all, UN peacekeepers must be respected and protected. The international community needs to be very clear about that. That's a quote from that tweet. Now, earlier this week, Simon Harris responded to questions on whether members of the Irish Defence Forces should be withdrawn from Lebanon if these attacks persist by saying, quote, various contingency planning for all possible eventualities are being considered. UNIFIL, for its part, says the mission is staying put. Well, I've been speaking to Colin Sheridan. He's a former commandant in the Irish Defence Forces who spent cumulatively about 3 years in Lebanon, most recently in the years between 2018 and 2020. And I began by asking him for his view on that running debate over whether UNIFIL troops should withdraw.
I don't, Colm, no, nor do I think that they should. And that kind of belief or that opinion is built around the whole reason that they're there in the first place and the mandate that they're there to fulfill. I think one of the misconceptions with an awful lot of the talk and chat over the last couple of weeks about what our troops are doing over there is that this is unprecedented. It's not unprecedented. Irish peacekeepers have been in these positions and situations before. Their history in UNIFIL stretches all the way back to the beginning in 1978. So they have, and we have as an army and as a peacekeeping force, trained ourselves to be there and be there in situations as much as this. So, but those peacekeepers need to remain there and observe and report as much as possible for as long as possible. Otherwise, the situation develops that, like we've seen in Gaza, quite honestly, where there is no independent observers, media or peacekeepers to observe what is happening. So, of course, I don't want to see any of my former colleagues and comrades' lives in danger, but I trust that their bosses and the UN, UNIFIL headquarters, etc., are equipping them as best as possible with everything that they can do their jobs, and I believe that to be the case.
And you say as long as possible. What would you think it would take to change the calculation about keeping UNIFIL there in terms of the thinking in New York or indeed the government of Lebanon?
I nearly wouldn't like to put it into words, Colm, to be honest, because I wouldn't like to speculate what that would be, because for me, it would be a fairly disastrous outcome. It would really be that the Israeli military on the ground continue their deliberate attacks on UN posts to the point that there's large loss of life of peacekeepers. That's nearly why I don't want to kind of speculate about that or say that, because you don't want to worry people. But I foresee that will not happen. I hope, obviously, that it doesn't happen, but that will become a red line, I think, at some point, but hopefully we'll never get to that.
What is the job? What do the peacekeepers do? What's a typical day like, you know, out on patrol, meeting the Lebanese and encountering maybe resistance on the patrols?
Yeah, so Colm, obviously their day to day has changed quite dramatically in the last couple of weeks, and we're obviously aware that they're spending an awful lot of time in shelters while they're still able to get out, man their defensive and observation posts, and observe and report from those fortified positions. But before this quite dramatic escalation, they would, as you say, have been doing daily patrols in conjunction with the LAF, which is the Lebanese Armed Forces, and they'd have with them language assistants who would be local employees for the UN that they would have long legacy kind of relationships with. So an awful lot of those patrols involve going into the local communities, obviously observing and reporting any violations of UN Resolution 1701. But I think what we need to also understand is that because they're there so long and they're so familiar with the terrain and the positions, that they're very much nearly part of the community over there as well. So the community does rely on them to protect them to a certain extent. Now, you mentioned incidents, hostilities. There are, of course, flare-ups. There are always flare-ups with local actors, and it would be remiss of me not to mention the death of Private Sean Rooney in South Lebanon in December in 2022. And that, of course, has you know, refocused any potential tensions that might exist between UNIFIL, the Irish, Hezbollah, and the local population. And I think at times like this, we do really need to remember that our troops have always, even in quieter times, have always been in an element of danger.
And they have found themselves in conflict with local actors, whether that's the Christian militia, the de facto forces, the SLA back in the 1980s, as you mentioned, Private Sean Rooney, and most recently at the UN posts, you know, which were fired upon by the Israeli Defence Forces. So in a situation like that, what are the protocols around defending themselves if they do come under fire?
Well, they have a contingent in their rules of engagement. They have within that an ability to return fire in an act of self-defense or in an act of defending the civilian population. So we saw, for instance, with the attacks on the UN post down in Nacora, that was not the case. I believe it wasn't the case anyway, that there was any return of fire from the Indonesian troops who would have been securing the perimeter there. But that is within the Irish rules of engagement that they can return fire to protect themselves or protect the civilian population.
And as it stands at the moment, with so much hostility in the area and the Israeli Defence Forces having invaded and exchanging fire with Hezbollah, what is the job of peacekeepers in that situation, and what is its importance in your view?
Again, the importance, and this is what I think I can't emphasise enough, is that take, for example, the Israelis' demands, direction, different verbiage has been used to describe what they did, but certainly they didn't ask peacekeepers to remove themselves. They were demanding that peacekeepers remove themselves, UN peacekeepers remove themselves 5 kilometres back from the blue line, and for the Irish to vacate their position last week. And that to me is absurd, because what the Israeli military are trying to do, in my opinion, there is do what they've already done in Gaza, what they're already doing in Beirut with their airstrikes. In my mind, what their wish in the end would be that UNIFIL withdraws completely and that they have the run of South Lebanon up to the Litani River. So as much as people can be skeptical of what the role of peacekeepers would be in this role is, their ability, first of all, to be present and for these UN posts to remain manned, it is in of itself a show of intent and force. And secondly, they're still able, and this is true for even in the worst of their situation last week, that they're still able to observe and report. And they were, at the worst of everything that was happening last week, able to do that and are continuing to do it now. And that does serve a function, because if they're not there, the Israeli military will continue their advance, their invasion of South Lebanon, and firing on UN posts that they know are clearly UN posts. They have the coordinates. They're very, very visible. They're very obvious that they're UN posts. They will test the threshold, see how much they can get away with, and continue advancing.
I mean, it obviously, you've been moved to write about it on a number of occasions now over the last few days. It gets under your skin serving as a peacekeeper out there and spending time and meeting the Lebanese people. You know, you're moved to write about it. You think about it a lot. You said at some level, you wish you were out there at the moment.
Absolutely. I think that's a common enough feeling, talking to people that are still serving both at home, people that have retired from the Defence Forces like myself. You do feel drawn to it. And I really do mean that, in the sense that it's not drawn towards danger. It's not drawn towards being part of the story. It's drawn towards wishing that you could help, first of all, the young guys out there, but also because, like, it's so woven into the fabric of our own identity as a Defence Forces, Lebanon, South Lebanon. I feel the same way about Beirut. I also feel extreme empathy for the families of all of those guys that are serving out there, because it is such an incredibly difficult situation for them, both thinking about it all the time, not having the busyness of the operations that their loved ones have to, you know, focus their minds. And it stays waiting to hear, watching news, looking at social media, and it might all be for a few minutes on the phone at the end of the day.
What should Ireland be doing then, you know, in terms of lobbying America, in lobbying through the European Union to put pressure on the Security Council to pull levers here? Because back in the past, in the 80s, the American government ultimately did pull the handbrake on the Israeli advance into Lebanon and, you know, secure at least some scaling down of operations there. Do you see any efforts ongoing at the moment to try and achieve anything similar through the international organisations that Ireland's involved in?
I guess, Colm, I only see what most of us are seeing. We obviously saw on Taoiseach with President Biden in Washington during the week. We always have to hope that whatever we're seeing, that there's deeper conversations going on, diplomatically speaking, behind the curtain. I'm so skeptical of that now, and I kind of even have to caveat by saying, I think for many, many people looking from the outside, of course we care so much about our Irish peacekeepers. Of course, this has become, even internationally, taking the Irish context out of it, it now seems that this is nearly a diplomatic red line that armed peacekeepers are being shot at. But what causes me to be very skeptical and cynical about it is that we know that at least 40,000 people have been killed in Gaza. We know that maybe half of those at least are women and children, defenseless, not armed peacekeepers with a blue helmet and a flak jacket and a rifle. And it hasn't stopped. So why then suddenly would the efforts of politicians that are getting so outraged that peacekeepers have been shot at do anything to change the situation?
And that was former Commandant with the Irish Defence Forces, Colin Sheridan, speaking to me earlier, drawing on his extensive experience in Lebanon. Now, let me introduce you to the political panel joining us here today. They're Sean Fleming, Minister of State at the Department of Foreign Affairs, and Fianna Fáil TD for Laois Offaly, Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal, and her party spokesperson on enterprise, trade and employment, and Marian Harkin, Independent TD for Sligo Leitrim, who joins us today from our Sligo studio. Minister Sean Fleming, thanks for coming in, first of all. And the remarks that were made by Colin Sheridan there, he thinks that the peacekeepers should stay in place, obviously, but in terms of exercising leverage to ensure the safety of the peacekeepers, how high was that on the agenda of the conversation that Taoiseach had with Joe Biden in Washington?
Well, the first thing, I think most people listening will agree with what Colin Sheridan has just said. Secondly, and the protection of our troops out there is the first priority for the Irish government in this situation. There are approximately 300 Irish people out there. Colin did say that Ireland has been on UN peacekeeping missions for almost 60 years now. We've never missed a single day. So we have a very strong position being peacekeepers. We don't go to war, but we help keep the peace. And Irish people have been very proud of that. What I think is that, and I know it's the backing of the US for Israel is a significant issue here. The same is happening on the other side. Other countries, near neighbours, are helping the Lebanese people as well. So what we're asking is all sides to engage in meaningful discussions after a ceasefire is called, and for countries with influence to use it on Israel to de-escalate and stop their activities. My view as well, and I think it's the view of a lot of Irish people at this stage, is that the actions by Netanyahu and his defence minister are breach of international law. And in my view, I've studied this carefully, they're in breach of the Geneva Convention, which deals that peacekeepers, civilians, non-participants in a war should not be targeted. This has happened in this stage. So at the end of this, when it's all over, Netanyahu has to be prosecuted, in my view, under the breaches of international law and breach of the Geneva Convention. But it's a while before we get to that stage yet, and we do need to have a ceasefire on both sides, a meaningful discussion. It's been tried up and down over the last couple of months, and there's always a hitch somewhere along the line. But I think the people with influence on Israel and on Lebanon, from both sides, should put pressure on both sides to implement a ceasefire.
I suppose the US is a permanent member of the Security Council.
Yes.
It has particularly strong relations with Israel.
Correct.
Israel is firing on UN peacekeepers.
Yes.
What should be done to get the US to exercise its influence for what is a visible breach of our Security Council Resolution 1701?
Yeah, and they should insist that the UN peacekeeping force should not be targeted. And I think everybody accepts, because of the specifics of the attack, the Israelis knew what they were doing. But there's other members on the Security Council, like Russia, who haven't been good in a lot of places, like Ukraine.
Sure, so they managed to get a UN Security Council resolution in 2006 to underpin the presence of UNIFIL in South Lebanon. There was clearly unanimity on the Security Council over this mission.
Yes.
In that context, with the US, where Ireland would like to think it has some influence, what are they specifically doing on this in order to protect peacekeepers amongst whom Ireland has a contingency.
Okay, and we have a contingent, and that's why they're saying put where they are, to move our troops out of their location at the moment across the terrain, thinking we can get them out safely, would put them at more at risk. So at least they're all present and accounted for and safe, and they have to hold on to the position until we get a ceasefire. At the end, it doesn't look like it today, but at the end of every war, we do have a ceasefire, and we want the USA and the people who influence the people on the other side to say, look, let's get to the ceasefire now, and because they've done enough of damage in the area.
Marian Harkin, are you any clearer as to what Ireland is doing listening to Minister Sean Fleming there?
Yes, I am. Not so much listening to Minister Fleming, though what he said is true. It's just looking at the overall picture. I heard what Colin Sheridan had to say, and he's speaking the truth. Shocking though it is, I think what the Irish troops and the UNIFIL troops are doing is trying to hold the middle ground, to protect the local community that they've built up relationships with. But in the bigger picture, trying to prevent an escalation towards a war with Iran, because that does seem to be the ultimate objective of Netanyahu. And if UNIFIL troops were to leave, and of course their safety is paramount, and I'll come back to that in a second, but if they were to leave, it just leaves the ground wide open for the Israeli troops, for Netanyahu's troops, to slash and burn like they've done elsewhere and not be accountable. And I think actually they're trying to provoke UNIFIL troops. I mean, we know that the troops are mandated to protect both themselves and the civilian population. And when you're fired upon and when you see what's happening to civilians around you, I actually think they're trying to provoke the UNIFIL troops to react, and then under a smoke screen or whatever, that they will say they are justified in what they're doing. I am also so aware that listening to this programme today, and so many others, our families, mothers, fathers, wives, children, aunts, uncles, because many of them have spoken to me, whose family members are part of the UNIFIL mission and who are afraid and really concerned about what might happen. So we have this really difficult balance of being there, of trying to be the last line of defence in a way. As I said, I believe coming up to the US election, it's like a pressure cooker at the moment. And I think we're actually hovering on the possibility of war with Iran between Israel and just bringing in the US and other countries, which is unthinkable, Colm. And that's the heroic role that the UNIFIL troops are playing. I know it's little comfort to families, but in truth, it is a crucial and most important role.
Okay. I want to bring in Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin's Louise O'Reilly here. I suppose the presence of UNIFIL troops there, their job at this stage in the midst of this phase of the conflict is to report back, to provide information which, you know, in other areas is not available, most notably Gaza. What's your view on them, A, remaining in place, and B, the efforts that are underway to keep them safe while they do their job?
But I think while we obviously want to pay tribute to the men and women, the Irish peacekeepers who are there, and the pressure and the stress that their families must be under, because they are obviously watching this unfold on the media. And I know that it's the communication is necessarily so, but it can be a bit patchy with them. And I suppose Israel are, and I was struck by what Colin Sheridan said, I wrote it down here, he said they will see how much they can get away with. And Israel will continue to act with impunity because they are not listening to the voices or the concerns. They will listen to sanctions. The Irish government should stop blocking the Occupied Territories Bill, should pass the illegal Israeli settlements divestment bill, and actually send that message to Israel that there will be consequences, because Israel acts in the way that it does because there are no consequences. There was a huge missed opportunity when Simon Harris was face to face with Joe Biden, not to press him very strongly. We know that that opportunity was passed up. It is really regrettable. But there have to be sanctions. There must be consequences for the actions of Israel. They don't feel those consequences. And Colin Sheridan is right. They will see how much they can get away with.
Sean Fleming, Colin Sheridan also, of course, mentioned Private Sean Rooney, who was killed in Lebanon. His family are frustrated, and indeed the coroner is frustrated about the level of information and assistance that has been provided by the UN. What can you tell us about the efforts that are underway to secure that cooperation so that the family can have some answers and the coroner can bring her proceedings to a conclusion?
We want the government wants to support the coroner in getting all the information necessary. And first of all, sympathies to the family of Sean. And that issue has risen in the last week at the coroner's hearing. They haven't sufficient adequate information at all from the UN. What I will say, and it's important people know this, is that they have released some information to the Irish government under strict legal conditions that had not be shared. The Irish government have received that. So we're seeking...
Was the coroner aware of that?
Maybe not in advance, but the coroner is aware of it now. And the coroner, we are seeking, and we are in the process of going back to the UN, UNIFIL, to get permission to release this to the coroner. Secondly, the coroner, as a result of this now, wants to join UNIFIL as part of an interested party in the coroner's process. And if that happens, that means they will have to share information. But we find it very unfair that there is information legally held up that should come before the coroner, and we're working to make sure that that happens. And so is the coroner by the coroner's actions to have UNIFIL declared as an interested party, and then they would have to assist.
And just to be clear about this, are you looking for that information to be released without the conditionality of, you know, that the coroner wouldn't be required to keep any of this secret in any way, that it could be shared indeed with Private Rooney's family?
Well, I think that as the coroner is doing the investigation at the moment, and I think we need to help the coroner do the process. That's what always happens. And the coroner then will be in a position to decide the information to be released. But we don't want the coroner doing a report and information coming from different... I'd like it to go through the coroner's court and to be dealt with by the coroner who's dealing with the investigation. And that's the channel of information I think will best help the family, if the coroner can come up with a good report at the end, having received all the information.
And are the family aware of these efforts?
I think in the last day or two, this has just come to light.
OK, we'll take a break. We're going to be speaking to the president of the Irish Hospital Consultants Association after this about the National Children's Hospital, amongst a few other things.
Saturday with Colm O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.